Alright people, welcome back to Hidden Mentality, episode 17. Today is a banger, I say it all the time, but it is a banger, because today we have Miss Jennifer Diaz. Jennifer is a high performance coach for ambitious entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs ready to lead with confidence, scale with purpose, and live with alignment. Through her signature mindset methods and deep understanding of behavior change, she helps her clients rewire subconscious beliefs, build resilient leadership, and create sustainable success without sacrificing well-being. Jen's path to coaching began with a bold leap, leaving a toxic job to pursue a calling she couldn't ignore. Since then, she's built a thriving business, hosted international retreats, and helped hundreds of leaders find clarity, confidence, and growth in both business and life. Her work centers on one powerful truth. Facing fear isn't a detour from success. It is the way through. What if the real reason you feel stuck isn't a lack of motivation, but a misunderstanding of who you really are? In this episode, we explore how fear, overthinking, and outside expectations cloud our own self-image, and what it really takes to break free. Why do we cringe at others? How does fear of being just normal shape our choices? And how can we actually measure growth in a world that rewards comparison? You will learn how to separate your true inner voice from the outside noise, reframe self-worth, and move forward even when overthinking is paralyzing you. We dive deep into how fear can be a compass, not a barrier, and you will walk away with tools to face what scares you, handle feedback with clarity, and make choices that align with your values, not someone else's version of success. So, after a long month with no Hidden Mentality episodes, please help me welcome Miss Jennifer Diaz. How much of who we are do you think is shaped by our fears?
That's a good one. You know, when I think about fear, it's an emotion, right? And so our emotions shape so much of who we are, of our perspective of the world. And fear is a really, really big one because we are wired for it. It has an incredible purpose in our lives. And so it has a dramatic influence on the way we live, how we think, how we view other people, the decisions that we make or don't make. So it has quite a bit of influence. And I'm curious because it's, you know, when I think about, you know, shaping who we are, fear is just like one aspect of us. So I'm really curious, what about fear made you choose that word?
I say fear because I think a lot of people, especially when it comes to taking action, we tend to use positive words such as passion and almost things that we get drawn to. Yeah. But I also do think there's this element that fear can be a driving motivator to start action because we're drawn away from something.
Oh, and absolutely.
I started this podcast because, I'll be honest, I think I was fearful in a sense that I was scared of living a lifestyle that I was currently on the path of. And I said, I don't want that. And I think that's what led me to this podcast. It's not like I was had this massive goal of becoming a podcast a few years ago. I probably listened to my first podcast a year and a half ago. It's just one of those things that came to me because I was scared.
So you have like a pretty intimate relationship with your own fear and your own, the way that you face it. I'm really curious about that. I think what you said in that is really true. There are two types of motivators that we have as humans. One is we want to move towards something. In my world, we would call that a positive motivation. We want to move towards a feeling that we want to experience or a life that we want to live, and that can be really powerful. And what you're describing is moving away from something, which we would consider a negative motivator. You know, I want to avoid pain, avoid sickness, avoid suffering in some way. And so we want to move away from it. And both serve a really powerful purpose And, you know, it's really the going back to the first question of this idea of how much of our fear shapes who we are. I think it really depends on your relationship to your fear, your relationship to your emotions in general, because for some people, a fear can be a sign that, oh, I need to avoid that or ignore that because it's too big to face. Or like you have done here is, I'm afraid of something. What can I do to motivate myself in the direction that I actually want to go?
And is there a positive element about fear that we can actually use? Because I know you use the word negative motivation, but does that actually mean it's a negative feeling?
Well, negative doesn't necessarily, I mean, negative feelings are negative feelings, but that doesn't make them bad at all. And so it's just kind of moving. You want to avoid something. You want to avoid feeling a certain way or avoid a negative outcome. And so that can be good. Can, you know, if I want to take care of my health, I don't want to get sick. That being sick is a very negative experience. And so, but the motivating me to do something positive for myself that can come from that for sure.
Yeah, but at what point do you think using fear can be unhealthy? And I think using fear is healthy at the beginning because it worked for me. I am scared at the same time that if I'm so focused on the obstacles, I can never be focused on the path.
Well, there is something to be said about what we are focused on, we'll often see proof of and find. You know, we have confirmation bias. So if you're constantly thinking about what you don't want to experience, you're likely setting yourself up to not enjoy the process or to eventually even experience that thing because you're very, very focused on it. So I think it has a place. You know, it's interesting. So my coaching is based in positive psychology. And so what we learn is it's negative motivators and fear absolutely has a place, and we want to honor that and get to know it and have a really kind of intimate relationship with your own fear so that you can understand it. But we actually want to add to that positive motivator. So you're thinking more about what you want. It's kind of the same as if you were going to start an exercise program or change the way you're eating because you want to avoid, you know, heart disease. That's because that's so big and negative, we don't often want to like keep that in our mind. But what we want to do is like that can be there, but we also want to utilize a positive motivator of, but I want to feel vibrant. I want to be able to do these things. I want to run and not get super winded. I want to wake up and have so much energy so I can focus on the things that I love about my life. You're going to find a lot more, I think energy around the positive motivators. So if you have, I mean, I'd be curious to hear about your fear, to be honest, when you're talking about starting this podcast, if you want to share, like what, because when we're thinking about the relationship that we have with our fear and how we can utilize it for our good instead of just a constant reaction, because that's the thing is if you are just constantly afraid, you'll be reacting all the time of just how do I survive? How do I survive? Like, how am I safe and okay? And that never leads us to thriving. And so for you, like when you can understand this fear is here for an important reason, what is it trying to tell you? You know, what was your fear moving you away from to lead you here?
Maybe this is an abnormal fear. I don't know. Maybe this is not a great fear to have, but I think I have a fear of being normal. And for me, normal is, I associate that with failure. And then I think I actually fear failure more than I desire success. And my bar for failure is so high that I'm trying to reach this bar just to survive and not gain.
That would be exhausting, I think.
Is a bit, I will be honest, because it's, I think it's, I tend to tell myself that I'm very good at analyzing, but then a part of me is like, I tend to overanalyze everything. And I feel like that can be a curse at times because I'm an overthinker. I will be honest. And I pride myself on being able to being reflective, but at the same time, I wish part of me was not as reflective on myself.
Mm. Yeah, blessing and curses, right? I'm curious, what about failure is so fearful, like so fear-inducing for you?
It's because maybe this is subconscious. I'm trying to give you answers that I think, but I don't know if they're actually true.
That's okay.
I think it's because, I'll speak on myself, I grew up in a family where I know I was privileged growing up. My parents worked very hard for my life to be privileged. So if I don't reach a certain bar that I set myself up for, that these privileges allow me to reach, that for me is failure.
Mm. So there's really a lot of, I mean, most fears are subconscious, by the way. And so it's a lot of like getting to know our fears is kind of looking under the rocks of like, what is under this? Why am I so afraid of failure? Why would, you know, this idea of me not utilizing my potential or my privilege, or, you know, is it harming my parents? Is it making their sacrifice or their hard work all for nothing? What does that say about me as like who I am and my identity? And typically what we find under our fears is this fear of, you know, not belonging, this fear of abandonment, which is a very intense fear, because as humans, we need other people. And if we don't have other people, if we don't belong, then typically that means exile and death. And it's very unconscious, right? Because these days we're like, that sounds ridiculous. My parents aren't going to, you know, peace out if I'm normal.
Yeah,
But at the same time, like that's our fear is evolutionary. We're really hardwired for it because it helps us survive. It serves that purpose. And these days when we're not running from hopefully bears or actual life threats in our day-to-day life, it can show up as, well, if you don't, you know, hit all A's, or if you don't find exactly what you want to do and make a ton of money and are incredibly successful, then, you know, what is your life even worth? Like, that's a heavy thing to look at. That makes sense why the fear would feel pretty great.
Where do you think we, as a general, or even like, let's say the people you work with, where do you think we tend to attach our self-worth to?
I think, when we think of self-worth, it's worthy of what? And I think a lot of us are thinking of worthy of being loved, worthy of, you know, taking up space, of being alive. And that to me is very inherent, but unfortunately we attach these things to, you know, who am I to my parents? Who am I to society? Who am I to my peers as we're growing up and we're trying to develop an identity and try to figure out, where do I belong in society? You know, how can I find meaning and a place and for myself in life? We attach it to all kinds of things. I think in the culture we're in the West, at least, we attach it a lot to success and what society tells us is successful, which is a very dangerous thing. And I think it's normal for us to do that, especially in the first half of life. And then hopefully in the second half, we start to dismantle that and think about, wait, but who am I on a soul level? And if my worth has never really waxed or waned, no matter if I fail or succeed, then what do I really want with my life?
What's dangerous about that definition of success that you brought up earlier?
Well, when we attach our worth to things that are somewhat uncontrollable, but outside of ourselves, a little bit more superficial. How you feel about who you are on a deep level will be dependent on things outside of yourself.
Mm.
And that's an unsteady place to be.
Yeah, I spoke to Dr. Anne-Laure LeConf, who's a neuroscientist. She just came out with a book called Tiny Experiments. And she talks about this idea that we tend to make linear goals and the results tend to be reliant on external factors. Mm-hmm. And our definition of success is then reliant on external factors. So to give you a broad example, let's say with this podcast, I want to get 10,000 downloads in the next week.
Yeah.
And completely hypothetical, let's say I don't sleep a second and I record a podcast for every second that I'm awake.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back in a week and I got 200 downloads. Was that week a failure? Probably not, because I literally did I did everything that was possible. But yet, because the result is not in my control, I view it as a failure. Yet, if I change my perspective now and say, how do I operationalize this goal for it to be in my control? Let's say I record a podcast a week for the next year. So but when that year comes, I can now look at it and go, did I do it or not? Rather than the result of that goal being in a different realm that I can't control.
Well, when we think about that too, I think about what you're saying, like, what do you think 10,000 downloads is going to do for you? What do you envision that, changing about your life or who you are?
It's ego. It's ego. I'll be honest. And I do think I have I'm not saying I want 10,000 downloads this week, but I will say, I think a lot of my goals are from ego.
Well, sure. Most of them are. Most of our goals can be, and that can be okay. I'm not like a ego is the enemy type person when it's aligned with who we are on a deeper level. It serves an important purpose in our psyche. But I think the other thing to think about with the other goal of, if I record one podcast a week for this amount of time, yes, there's output and there's potential outcome for that. But also what we're looking at is, who are you becoming when you're doing that? How is that changing you on a deeper level? It's making you consistent. It's building your self-trust. That builds your self-efficacy. There's confidence that can come from that, versus if you had 10,000 downloads, you're probably not going to feel the same way about yourself for long term.
And I will say, I think the reason I cling on to certain statistics are because I think they're just easier to access. For example, it's hard for me to measure in even empirically or statistically or numerically the change in the person I've become. It's very hard to reflect on that. But when I look at the numbers on my YouTube, my podcast, I can go, oh, well, I've only got 2 subscribers this week. That means I haven't done enough.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, you're kind of giving yourself, you're discrediting your being as a whole in a way, when we think about that from a linear perspective, which is it's a very masculine energy, a very masculine thing to do, right? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's only half of what you are. There's also this deep sense of, who am I on a soul level and my connectivity and how can I be creative? And it is hard to measure those things. It's almost impossible to measure, but you feel them. That's the caveat there is, you can't measure it, but it's also something within you that shouldn't be measured. It's deserves more than being measured.
So how do we give ourselves credit even when a tool to measure doesn't exist?
Well, I think, did you enjoy it?
I love recording podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. You enjoy it. Are you learning?
I hope so. I believe so.
Yeah. So you're growing. Is it changing you? Is it making you a better human, a kinder human, a more compassionate person?
That I don't know. That's where I struggle to, that's not a no. It's just, I struggle to answer that question because I don't know how I can answer that question, because it's not like I have statistical data to back it up that I'm a kinder person or I'm a more compassionate person. It's tough to analyze that.
Yeah, sure. I think that's something you can feel though. You start noticing, I'm being a little less judgmental to people. I'm having a little bit more awareness of my own insecurities, of my own things about myself that maybe I don't enjoy, and I'm less reactive to people. It's not something you can track probably and keep, have hard data on, but it is something of, I'm noticing the way that I am in my relationships and with the people in my life is shifting.
Yeah. And I will say, I struggle to reflect on my current self. However, I do think I can easily reflect on my past self. So, like, I can tell you now that the person that I was feeling, like, the person that was here 9 months ago, how they were feeling, because I now have a comparison to make. If, like, yeah. I have a bar that I've overcome, or it's easier for me to tell you that, oh, Rishi Kurata was not as happy during this part. He was way happier during this part. I can't tell you how I was feeling now, but I can definitely tell you how I was feeling back then.
What do you think is hard about being able to tell me how you're feeling now?
Oh, that's tough. It's maybe it's because I don't have a set bar that I'm always looking at, and my bar is changing constantly that I can compare my current self to the previous bar that I had a few months ago. And I could say, well, Rishi Kurata's happiness, like, for example, let's say right now, I don't know how happy I am, but I can tell you that I'm happier than how I was a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know if my happiness now is at 100%, 75%, but I can tell you that it's 10 more percent than what it was a few months ago.
Yeah. It's hard to put percentages on emotions sometimes.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and sometimes I think I would encourage you to think about, instead of trying to measure it, just ask, like, what is going on with me? You know, and that's part of the emotional intelligence piece that is so valuable. Especially as you enter the world, if you're going to move into entrepreneurship, like, understanding what's going on for you, what you're feeling in the moment, because emotions are data. I mean, if you want to talk about data, emotions are data. When you can understand what each one is trying to alert you of, typically emotions, the negative ones specifically, are trying to tell you, hey, there's a need that you have that is not being met. And we need to get your attention so that you can meet this need, so that you can understand and be informed on how to move forward in your life in this exact moment. Because that's the thing about emotions and life in general, is happiness especially, like, it's not a linear thing. You know, everything has seasons, and all seasons, whether they're, you know, full of positive emotions or negative emotions, have their importance for us, something to learn, something to grow from.
I will say, I did use the word, like, happy before. I try not to get wrapped under this concept of happiness, just because you can tell me your thoughts. I think happiness can also be very perspective based. Like, yeah. It's almost like, I don't want to say it's a choice completely, but I can be financially not in a great spot, and I can be financially in a very great spot, but I feel like the way that I look at each point of my life that I'm in dictates my happiness, not what actual position I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be perspective based. It can be health related. There's so much that goes into, you know, the way that we feel in our state, and happiness is, can be quite fickle sometimes too. And it absolutely depends on our perspective on things. Gratitude makes a huge difference. And I don't know with happiness, but I think overall life fulfillment, and that perspective shift, a genuine sense of gratitude, is really, really powerful in improving your overall perspective of life. So we know that. And there's a study done years ago where they discovered that people have a set bar, like about 60% of your happiness is pretty much set with your basic makeup. And then the other 40% of your happiness is how you can, your perspective, the actions you take, like, that's within your control, which is an interesting thought process.
And how do you optimize that 40%?
Well, I think it's individual, you know, thinking about what helps you feel happy, what helps you enjoy your life, what makes you feel purposeful and fulfilled, and prioritizing those things, prioritizing, you know, perspective and mindset, and, you know, focusing on the things that you actually can control in your life.
A lot of this seems to be very self-introspective, which I like having conversations about, because I think one of my, like I said earlier, blessing/curse is that I'm very self-introspective. Mm-hmm. I do wonder, especially with all your clients that you have, and as a mentality coach, how do you help analysis paralysis? And when I say that, I mean people that are stuck in their mind, people that have a broken mentality right now. How do you think your way out of a mind problem?
Well, I think we get to the root of why they're stuck, why they're feeling paralyzed a little bit, what's going on for them. Typically fears, you know, what are the fears that are there? And one of the best things we do is start to develop a growth mindset, which is very different from fixed. When you have a fixed mindset, it's very much success, failure, win, lose, which for the majority of our lives, especially in the way schooling is done, we are hardwired to develop, because it's you get the A or you fail. It's, you know, you get an award or you win the game or you lose. And it is very black and white fixed as we're growing up. And then you get into the world, especially in entrepreneurship, and they're like, success is always shifting. There is typically not a one way to win or lose. It's really about, am I trying? Am I being curious? Everything is an experiment. Everything is, I'm learning constantly. And if I do fail, then that's actually just lessons for me to apply and get better and learn and move on to the next thing. And so a lot of analysis paralysis is this idea of, it's very fixed. It's, if I do this, I will succeed. If I do that, I will fail. And you're so scared to make the wrong choice that you end up not making a choice at all, which ultimately does lead to failure in a sense. And so it's really about understanding why the fear is there, where it's coming from, how you can meet the need that it has for you, but then embrace the growth mindset and play and experiment with what you want to do.
Yeah, the fear of starting anything is quite universal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I had it, and I think that's, in a weird way, maybe that's what drove me to start the podcast, because it's almost like, Rish, you are so scared of starting that you got to at least prove to yourself that you got to start. Because yeah. If you don't, that means, like, in the nicest possible way to myself, you're being a coward. You know, like, yeah, and obviously, yeah. I'm not going to say that to other people who have that problem. But I do wonder, part of me is also thinking that, like, if I have an overthinking problem, how do I think myself out of an overthinking problem? It's almost like there has to be an action that has to be connected to it, right?
Yeah, you need to move. You need to act. You need to do at least one small step to get you out of that. Like, if you notice if you're stuck in an overthinking, I love, for me, if I'm trying to make a decision or if I'm facing fear of something, one of the best things I do for myself, at least, is get outside in nature and go for a walk. No intake, no music, no podcast. I'm not listening to anything. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm just getting out of my head, into my body, moving. And then deciding, you have to take one action when you get back home. Like, it's just one step in a direction. Doesn't matter what it is. You have to move forward. And so I think that that can be really helpful when you are stuck in that, like, I'm overthinking. And then trying to understand too compassionately of, like, hey, why are you overthinking this? Like, what is so terrifying about starting a podcast? People do it all the time. You know, what was so scary about it for you?
Because the people around me don't see me as the type of person that would run this type of podcast. Mm-hmm. Even if they tell me now, hey, I knew you're the type of person that was built for it. When I dropped my first ever Instagram story saying I'm doing this podcast, I could tell everyone was like, what the hell is going on? It was a good feeling at the same time. Like, yes, I've shot my friends, but at the same time, that was the fear that I had.
So, and I wonder how much that feeling was actually them thinking that and how much it was you projecting that onto them.
What do you mean?
Sometimes when we think, we have these stories of, oh, my friends are going to think I'm like, what is happening? He's not the type of person to do that. It's a sign that we actually think that about ourselves and we are projecting those thoughts onto the other people in our lives. Sometimes they're true, but not always. And so it's a really interesting thing to look at within yourself of what part of you thinks, what are you doing?
Yeah, maybe I should do see a lot of truth in that. And I will say, I think I am, you asked me even, what is it, like 5 minutes ago, do I think I'm a better person after I saw this podcast? I'd like to say that I am, just because I don't know if emotionally I'm more aware of myself. I'm able to make more mature decisions. And I don't know if that's causation, correlation. I don't know what that is. I don't want to be, you know, scientifically insignificant, but I would like to say that from the point that I started the podcast, the growth that I've had mm-hmm. is at a different rate than the growth I've had before I started the podcast.
That makes sense to me because you face the fear. And I do think the more that you learn about yourself, for me at least, it has created a lot more compassion and love for other people. Like the more I've shown myself love and compassion, the more I'm able to give that to others, to recognize we all have fears. We all have things we're facing and dealing with and worried about. And if I can face them in myself, I can hold more space for other people going through that as well.
You said something that was really interesting. You said we tend to learn more about ourselves. Do you think that is linked with facing our fears? That when you face your fears, you learn the most about yourself?
I think so. Yeah.
Why?
You don't fear things you don't really care about. You don't, fear is, it's important. I mean, it's one of the most common emotions humans have. And when you understand what it is that you fear, it'll show you also what you care deeply about.
When we face our fears, it shows what we actually care about.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you care about, what you value is a really, important key to understanding who you are and, you know, your identity.
So is that a way of investigation to even figuring out your desires? Because I think a big thing is a lot of us don't know, especially as 20-year-olds, college students, what we want to do in life. It's yeah. a good way of actually figuring it out, asking ourselves what we're scared of.
I think it could be. Yeah. I mean, you're in this phase of your life, like you shouldn't know.
I know. Yeah.
I would hope you didn't know. If you did, I would be, you know, I bet in years to come, there would be massive shifts and recognition because you're still becoming. I mean, we all are, I think, but especially your 20s are meant to explore. And that would be something I would encourage you to look at is what are you afraid of? Can you be courageous enough to face the fear? And that takes a strong ego, a healthy ego to be able to do that, which is important and something that, you know, you're in your 20s, you're still like strengthening and building. But I do think facing your fears, looking underneath that, being curious about what it has to show you, as well as what are you interested in naturally? Like, what are you drawn to? Those are all going to give you clues to, hey, you should look at that, pursue that, just learn more about that. The other thing that I think is a really interesting thing to do that people do not enjoy doing is also looking at what do you judge most in other people? And can you be curious about your judgments? Because those can often have some interesting insight for us as well.
Like what?
Well, typically you think about when I'm judging someone else, and this depends. This is like a really big scale and there's a lot of nuance here, but let's say I'm judging in the past, maybe judging someone for not having it all together or being able to, you know, practice art or do something that seems so out of my own comfort zone. Typically in that judgment, there's something about me that I'm not allowed to do for whatever reason. And it's worthwhile to look at, you know, why do I have a really strong reaction to this person? What's in there for me to learn so that I can understand what's going on for myself and maybe lessen the judgment that I have of them and lessen the judgment that I have towards myself as well.
That's interesting because I always had this concept as a kid in high school. It's like one of the number one words I think everyone uses is the word cringe.
Cringe.
And I exactly.
Exactly.
And I used to look at this word cringe and go, why am I cringing at this person or why are they cringing at me? And I think it's almost like whenever we cringe at someone or whenever someone's doing anything cringe, it's almost like they've been given a moment to be their true selves, and we get so drawn back. We're like, whoa, that is not okay because I'm not doing the things that I would truly would do, and they are. So that's cringe.
Exactly. Well, and you can find a lot of things that you would genuinely enjoy in the cringe. You know, this is an interesting example I'll share with you. So I used to cringe so hard when I would see people crying on social media. They would take videos of themselves crying and then post it. I used to think, oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing. That's so cringy. And for me to look at that, and I'll be honest, I'm not going to be the type to cry on social media, even still. Like, there's nuance to that. Sometimes I do think it's a little manipulative and it can be exploitive. But I also can recognize when I used to cringe really hard at it was because I was so uncomfortable showing outward emotion like that. Like, even in my relationships, it was very, like, I'm not allowed to be overly emotional. So I have to keep that locked in. So, of course, I'm going to cringe at someone who's doing it so publicly. So for me to look at that and recognize, like, okay, maybe I can actually allow myself to be emotive to, especially in close relationships. Now, when I see that, I don't necessarily relate to it, but I don't cringe anymore because I've kind of faced that within myself. So, you know, that's not something I technically enjoy, but I think we experience that a lot in like high school, middle school, high school, even some in college, where if someone's really interested in something that's not mainstream or really popular amongst everybody else, you cringe at it. And that's a normal, like, psychosocial developmental phase. And then I hope in the 20s and definitely 30s, and as we get older, you stop caring about that and you start actually doing things you enjoy. So you embrace the cringe. There's a lot of joy, fulfillment, and fun that can be found in that too. So yes, it's looking at what am I so afraid of? Can I face that? What am I really drawn to and why? Can I like play with that too? And what makes me cringe? And can I allow myself to, you know, loosen up and maybe not judge myself or other people so hard and like be weird about it?
Around this concept of cringe, I wonder if our own subjective definition of something being cringe is based off of our inflicted, our self perspective, or the people around us. Is it nature
Yes.
or nurture?
A lot of it, I think, that's in this, I don't actually know, but my perspective would be a lot of this would be nurture. So when we're growing up, you know, especially through the ages of 0 to 7, we're creating so many new neural pathways because it's a lot to learn to be human. How do I function within my family, which is like those are the people you need to survive? How do I function within my peers? Because I need to learn how to do that in order to survive too. How do I function in my community? So you're taking in all of this information of, hey, as like to be with us, you need to belong. That's how you survive. So this is how we think about money. This is what we believe about, you know, other people or different, like this is who you are. Like you're gonna grow up and you're gonna be a doctor, you're gonna be a lawyer, you're gonna be this because that's success in our family. And so we get this programmed in. And the other part of that is like we are the type of people we don't do these things. We are not. I have a friend who loves art, but in her family, art was not taken seriously. It's not something you really need to pursue. We don't appreciate it. We don't care for it. So we kind of judge it. We make fun of it. So for her, despite this deep love of it, she would judge it and say like, oh, I would never do that. I would never, waste my time trying to figure that out. That's not worth it. And then later in life, you come to this realization of like, oh, actually, I wanted that, but I was taught it wasn't allowed. And so I made it cringy for myself because I wasn't allowed to enjoy that and be that. And now that I'm dismantling that, I'm becoming aware of who I am on a deeper level. I actually want to pursue that. And now I have to overcome this programming that taught me I'm not allowed to. I have to overcome this judgment that was passed down to me that now is mine, so that I can do something that I genuinely want to do. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but
No, it does,
yeah.
because I think it perfectly resonates with my situation as well, because I grew up in a very different friend group than I don't know how to say it. In the friend group that I was part of in high school, the values that we had were nowhere near the values that I have when it comes to this podcast. And
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I felt very out of place in that friend group. That was the people that I surrounded myself with.
Yeah.
But once that we went off to college and it's almost like you're starting from scratch, I got an opportunity to almost explore my own perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's the annoying part, is that I couldn't figure that out without changing my entire environment.
But that's nor that's okay. That's
Yeah.
normal. Yeah, that's how life goes sometimes is, and that's the thing too. It's funny, my husband and I were, it was just his birthday this week, and so we were talking about life, and we were asking each other like, if you could go back and tell your younger self, something, what would it be? And in the past, for me, I would have wanted to go back and given her advice to try to avoid pain, to try to avoid learning things the hard way, to try to do something different because I think it would be better for me now. And now, knowing what I do, and I'm 37, I think I would just tell her like, hey, I love you. You're doing great, and it's enough. Keep going. Just keep trusting yourself and keep going. So there's not much about the path that I took, the mistakes that I made, the wishing I had figured it out on my own instead of changing environments. I wouldn't do that. I would just allow myself to live and do the best that I can in each moment and know that that's what I was doing all along. And it led me here. And I'm excited for where that will take me in the future as well. The fact that you're seeking that and you're asking these questions, that's huge. That takes a lot of courage to do, especially at the age that you're at. It's not, I would say, typical at all.
No, I appreciate that. I do also think about how in this context of how our environment shapes us, I also do think about how to handle the feedback from others. And I think people struggle to, whether it's criticism or it's even the values that go around with the people around them, it's hard to actually digest what's going on.
It is, and especially I feel like where you are right now too, because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, obviously, but so much of our adolescence is taking feedback and learning because we don't know. We don't have wisdom yet naturally. Like you get wisdom with life experience and applying the lessons that you learn. And you don't have that. So we are kind of reliant on other people's feedback and the way they're living to start to develop the path for ourselves. And then you're on this precipice of, well, you need there, you do have a little bit of experience now, and you have an intuition that is really wise. And it's about trusting that and following that and pursuing that and having the courage to do that despite the feedback. And the more you develop that sense of self-trust and identity outside of, how other people perceive you to be, the I think more resilient you can become to feedback. And you have some more awareness too nowadays. For me, at least, I'm like, I take feedback seriously from people I respect who care about me and know me and want what's best for me. Or like in work, like I take feedback seriously from clients and, you know, the people that I'm working with on that level. When it comes to other people who maybe aren't living in a way that I would want to, maybe have differing values, without judging them, I just can understand, thank you for that. And I'm not going to take that in. That's not something I need to apply because I trust myself and know myself well enough now to know that this is the best way for me to move forward.
Yeah, one of the difficult things I encounter is I think my self-trust and even my inner voice is also influenced by the voices around me. It's not like they're two mutually exclusive concepts where I can compare the two. I think my inner voice is actually very much, I would actually say more than 50% is influenced by the other voices around me.
Yeah, that's so normal. That's where it takes time and practice to separate the two, to hone the two. And we're always being influenced by who we're around. Like your environment influences you heavily. And that is something we cannot always control, but as we grow up in adults and we have more agency, you have a little bit more control over. And so that's something to take very seriously of who am I surrounding myself with? Who do I, you know, let see this part of me? Who do I share my dreams with, the things that I value with? Like that's really, that matters. As well as what environment am I putting myself in over and over and over again?
What is the practice to almost separate our inner voice and be able to see it as a different voice compared to the other voices?
Oh, that's such a good question. For me, getting quiet and really being still, learning to sit with myself, which is hard, not always fun. But in those moments, like if you can't distinguish between your own voice and the voices of others around you, I would say you've got way too much input coming in externally. And so we need to sit and we need to get quiet and we need to shut out the noise and we need to kind of ask like, hey, what do you sound like? Like have that relationship with that inner voice, with your intuition and tune in and say like, what do you sound like? What do you feel like? Where do I feel you? For me and my intuition strong, I get a very distinct feeling in my body and I can't always explain it. And over time, I've learned to trust that instead of trying to over-intellectualize it at times. I've made the biggest mistakes in my business and in my life by trying to intellectualize that voice because at the time it didn't like some of the decisions it was pulling me towards didn't make sense logically. In hindsight, I'm like, oh, it was spot on. And those were important lessons for me to learn because now I know you have to trust that, you have to listen to that. But that takes years of, or just maybe not years, maybe just consistently getting quiet, learning how to hear it, learning what it feels like, and learning to listen.
Yes, I think the separation of the inner voice actually allows us to reflect on the external voices as well. Because your point about who we choose to have a drink with, who we choose to have to sit down with, who we choose to work with, who we choose to partner with, all those decisions can be more efficiently created if we're able to actually distinguish between our inner voice and what our inner voice wants.
Yeah, exactly. And asking yourself, like, you kind of hit this earlier, you're like, oh, it's ego. Like the reason I want 10,000 downloads is ego. And I think that's great to know. And I would always encourage you to continue asking yourself, I'm not judging it either. Like just saying like, okay, egoically, that would be really nice. And sure, that's fair. But on a deeper level, does it feel fulfilling? Is it leading you to actually where you want to go with your life? Is it helping you become the man you want to be? Like those are the deeper questions to it that maybe yes, maybe no, maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know, but for you to sit down and get quiet and start to learn, like, what does my inner voice sound like? Who am I without the influence of everyone else?
What does that look like for you, that silence, that sitting down with the inner voice?
Yeah, for me, meditation is a really powerful way. Journaling is another way. I really love journaling in a way of like kind of subconscious brain dumping. It's mm-hmm. really helpful in the morning. I don't know if you've heard of Julia Cameron, the Artist Way author. She coined the term morning pages, where you sit down and you have to write 3 pages of just like a stream of consciousness. And so for me, that's, it's, you can really get to know yourself on an interesting level, especially about when you get to a page and a half, that's when things really start coming through, because at first that's a lot to write, even for me, and I love journaling. But those ways have been really powerful, just like sitting in the quiet, paying attention to your thoughts, paying attention to the sensations of how you feel, like that connection to your body is really, really important when it comes to intuition.
Yeah, I almost bring this up on every podcast. One of my good mates, Sean Pritchard, I had him on the show. He's going to kill me because I can't remember what waves it is. He does say that when you journal in the morning, it's like some alpha, gamma, there's some like gamma. Is it yeah. gamma? I can't remember. But like once you wake up, like you're able to access the subconscious easier.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. There's like theta. There's all kinds of different ones.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because what happens, and the same thing with like, I love actually visualization as well. Just your subconscious has so much to show you, and it does this in dreams when you're literally asleep, but it can do this in visualization too. You get into that state of consciousness where your conscious mind can chill out and take a break, and your subconscious can come forward. And it's highly symbolic, and there's some interesting things that sometimes don't make sense, but can provide a lot of insight to who you are, kind of in the hidden, you know, to your literal hidden mentality, can really show you so much there. And so being curious about that and getting yourself into that meditative state where you can allow your subconscious to come through and show you things. And I do this a lot, especially when I have decisions that I'm not clear on, or if I have a really big fear about making a decision, like, let me get quiet and let me meditate, visualize, let me journal, let me get into this state. It is helpful early in the morning for sure. But, and let me see what wisdom I can find there. And it's profound in how it works.
I will say my dreams have a lot of shit going on. I don't know if all of them make sense. Like sometimes I have like Humpty Dumpty eating like an omelet, and sometimes it's, you know, like actually Rishi Karada. So it's hard to like, you know, find which ones actually make sense. When it comes to my inner voice though, I will say at times it can be very self-deprecating. That's a word, right?
Absolutely.
It can sometimes be like, yes, the external voices around me can they can put me off. My inner voice can put me off as well, even when I separate it. How do I work around that?
Well, so I would be very curious who that sounds like, that harsh, self-deprecating inner voice.
Oof, who that sounds like? What do you mean? You think like there's an actual source that comes from?
Typically, it's learned.
I do not know. That is a very good question. Where does my inner voice's self-deprecation come from? Maybe this is not the answer that you typically get. But I don't think it's anyone voicing it onto me. I think it's almost like my perspective of what, for example, my father works incredibly hard. And it's almost like I can sometimes see that he may have a very high standard for himself, and he may have a self-deprecating voice. So I don't know if it's not like he like harasses me and screams at me. It's almost like I've maybe seen that self-deprecating voice and I've taken it in my head. That's what my first instinct is. I don't know if that's actually the truth. I don't, like, it's hard.
It's a very common answer.
Is it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And not to blame parents, but we love them. But typically I'm a mom and my son is almost two. And one thing I've heard over and over again is his inner voice will be mine and my husband's. The way that we talk to ourselves about ourselves is how he will learn to speak to himself, to treat himself. Of course, if you have a parent actually saying awful things to the child, that's definitely going to impact him. But he's going to watch the way that we handle failure, how we handle disappointment, how we speak to one another, and how we treat ourselves. And he will learn to mimic that. He will learn to treat himself that way too. And so it's a really mindful. Mine is, we all have these voices that are really self-deprecating. For me, mine used to be awful. I'm like, no one would speak to me. No one can hurt me the way that I have. No one can say, like, no one's going to be meaner to me than me here, to be real. And so for me, though, learning to get to know that part of myself, the mean part, that's so harsh, has been huge. So I, instead of being like, shut up, you're the worst, like, I'm going to lock you away. Actually, that's a younger part of me, typically. That really mean version is scared. There's a lot of fear there. It has a reason. It's trying to, coerce me into doing what it wants me to do. And it's a signal of like, oh man, that's a wound at a certain age that if I can look at and I can hear her out in a compassionate way, and compassion's not like, oh, you're right, like it's fine. It's not very permissive. It's like, hey, I love you. You have worth and value. Let me hear you out. And here's what we're going to do that's in our best interest because I care about you that much. And so getting to know that harsh voice on that level of, hey, where are you coming from? Why are you so harsh? Like, what do you want for me? What are you afraid of? What do you need for me in this moment? Can we have that conversation? And I've done that in journaling too. It's like having that kind of dialogue conversation with that voice that is harsh, that is self-deprecating, because I would say that's not maybe your intuition speaking. That's not like that wise inner voice that is kind and loving. That's a fear-based voice that's trying to keep you safe in some warped way. And when we can communicate with it healthily and openly, it loses some of its venom.
Yeah. Do you think, I know this sounds weird, but like, I know that my inner voice, as much as it can be a prick, what I've realized is the criticism that affects me the most, even when it's external, it tends to be when I feel like there's a bit of truth in it. Like,
Always,
yeah, you know, that's what hurts the
always.
most, especially when I get like someone being an absolute jackass to me and they've said something really stupid to me and I just go, God, like I'm pissed, but I'm just like, the reason I'm getting pissed is because maybe they're right. Like maybe like my essay was horrible. Maybe I played terribly on the football pitch the other day. You know, it's one of those things, and I know it can be not that deep, but it's just like it gets to me when I know part like deep down that there is an element of truth in it.
Absolutely. And so that's valuable to think about. And there's a difference between feedback of like, hey, like Rishi, this essay, this wasn't up to the standard that we know you can produce. Like that's a very loving thing for someone to show you because that what that says is like, I see your potential, I see what you're capable of, and you're playing down to that. And I want you to rise to the bar that we know you can hit. That's different from straight up like criticism of like who you are and that inner voice of, maybe it's highlighting something you do believe about yourself, about your worthiness, about something that's probably not true, but that's hitting that like, oh, I'm not good enough in this way. I'm not, adding to that. And that's where we need to look at of if this is hitting on, oh, they made me feel like I wasn't good enough, and that hit really hard because I kind of believe that about myself. That's a belief I need to work through. I need to excavate. I need to understand what needs to be healed in me so that I can shift and move forward and know that no, you are worthy, even when you fail. That doesn't impact that. You can improve, you can get better. That's what helps that growth mindset as well. So yeah, I would make that distinction between the two, between like feedback that is sometimes hard to hear, but overall loving and helpful, versus straight up criticism that is designed to tear you down.
And I will say, we spoke about the fact that we should trust our inner voice when we get negative criticism from others. But sometimes we can also trust the external voices when we get negative inner criticism. So, for example, when I met you at Sam's book launch, for the first, I think I was there with my best mate Flint, and for the first 30 minutes, I was just not speaking to anyone. And I'm telling you this now because I was telling Flint this as well, and Flint noticed it like 30 minutes in. The first time someone came up to me and spoke to me, I wasn't that receptive to it. Not because I'm not a prick. Like I like talking to people, but because I think I believed to myself that I didn't deserve to be in that room. As a 20-year-old, as a person who's, this is the 17th episode of the podcast, as a person who just started this podcast 6 months ago, I was like, I could tell myself, or I could feel myself downplaying myself. And Flint, I think after that first conversation, goes, "Rish, what the hell are you doing?" And goes like, "Why are you being so naive? And like, why are you downplaying it? Like, it doesn't matter whether you think it or not. You're here anyway. And if you're here, that means you deserve it." And that allowed me to just go, "You know what? Screw it. Like, I'm just gonna talk to people because I'm here. Like, I may as well." What I realized that day is if I'm there, I deserve it. And I don't know if that's like an overall universal thing to just hold, but I realized that I tend to downplay myself, and sometimes external voices can actually help me push me out of my internal criticism.
Absolutely. And that's why who we're around and the environment we're in is so important. That's something when I was training to become a coach, one of their like cornerstone ideas is as a coach, whoever I work with, it is I have to commit to wholeheartedly believing in them. And so we say as my coach, like my belief in you is greater than your doubt. So when you doubt you can borrow belief from me because I don't doubt you, because I see your potential. I see how amazing you are. I see what you're capable of. I have no doubt in your ability to do this. I don't have the insecurities about you running through my mind. I don't have the voices of doubt. Like I see you in a room. You're in this room. Be in this room. Don't question whether or not you deserve it. Be where you are. And like accept that. That's amazing. And so that's something that can be really profound in relationship with other people. It's really powerful.
Yeah, I like this idea. Surround yourself with people that believe in you more than you believe in yourself at times.
Yeah, and vice versa. It feels so good to believe in other people. It's my favorite part of my work.
And like I was reading, I forgot whose newsletter it was the other day, but there was this gorgeous quote by Van Gogh, which goes, "If I'm worth something now, I'm worth something later." Or no, "If I'm worth something later, I'm worth something now. For wheat is wheat, even if it is grass in the beginning."
Yes, I saw that quote too. I wonder if we're on the same newsletter. Was it James Clear?
I think it was Chris Williamson,
Okay, I don't know who that is,
but
but
James Clear, he probably took it from James Clear, or maybe it was James Clear's, because I
I
am
don't
on his
know.
newsletter too. But it is, when
That's
I
a
saw
great
that quote, I
quote.
thought that was so good, and it helped
Yeah.
me. Like I know I'm not the type of person to just, I mean, some people are, I like to like gain so much satisfaction from quotes. But like for me, that was like, holy, like that is so
Yeah.
good.
Oh, I am. I love a quote. I love quotes so much. I love reading, so that's where that comes from. I have gained so much wisdom and insight from reading quotes like that. But I love that, and that's the thing too, is for you, it's and this is that part of like self-acceptance that can be so radical. If you completely accept yourself, even the parts that you maybe don't like or you think are quirky and weird and you don't want everyone to see, like especially those parts, you don't have to like them, but accept them at least. It allows you to be where you are. It allows you to show up to an event like that, and instead of questioning, do I belong here? Like, what am I doing here? You don't. You're just like, well, I'm here. And so I'm worth something. I'm going to be here. I'm going to learn. I'm just going to be myself. That That is what so many people are craving. And I work with that. I have entrepreneurs who have been incredibly successful, who have earned their way, if they needed to, onto stages and into rooms, and still question, who do I think I am? So it's really not about earning that. It's about just recognizing you, because you exist, you deserve to take up space. And if you can accept who you are and you can be where you are, there's so much to gain from that. And it's a lot more fun to show up and live that way.
Jen, it's been an absolute pleasure. I do this with all my guests when I record an episode because you're a lot wiser than me. So what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's a big question. Man, the best piece of advice I've ever received. I mean, simply, I think it's just be where you are.
What do you mean?
Be where you are, be present where you are, be with yourself where you are, accept where you are. There's like a level of acceptance, I think, in that statement for me, where I'm not trying to force things to be different. I think there's a lot of different philosophies on the idea of resistance is what creates suffering in life. And so for me, it's just a way of accepting who I am in the moment, being who I am in this moment, and being exactly where I am. Because that's all we have. I mean, ultimately, is this present moment. And so being here, enjoying that, being present for it all, the good and the bad, the hard and the easy, that has been profound for me.
Love it. Jen, where can we find you and what is next?
Oh, what's next? You can find me at my website, jenniferdiaz.com. I write a weekly newsletter, the Monday Mindset newsletter, that I'm the most consistent with content. And right now I recently started a Substack that for me I've been enjoying growing called Unlocked with Jennifer Diaz. So you can find me there too. And on Instagram at Jen M. Diaz.
Love it. You wrote an awesome Substack the other day, about how to handle feedback.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I saw that.
Thank you.
That's where I got the idea. It was good.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, Jen, thank you so much for coming on. It means the absolute world.
I enjoyed this conversation very much. Thank you.